Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we spend our 90 minutes talking about birds, zeroing in a bit on owls, because our guest today, Laura Erickson, who writes for the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, she writes for Birdwatching Magazine, The Country Today, has also written a new book, and it's called 12 Owls, and it's a fun book. I finished reading it late yesterday, and really enjoyed it, and I know you're going to enjoy hearing what she has to say about owls and about her book, and I'm sure we'll probably talk about other birds as well as we move along and visit with her. Questions or comments for her? You're a regular birder. How'd you get started? Do you enjoy owls? Have any stories relating to owls that you want to share? How many species have you seen in Wisconsin? Those are all questions that would be good ones to ask. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And Laura Erickson, are you there?
I hope so.
Laura, thank you so much for taking time to be with us. They really appreciate it.
Well, I love being on your show, Larry. You are the funnest person to talk to.
Well, you're a fun one to talk to as well. And I tell you what, I really did enjoy reading your book and looking at the wonderful artwork. Beautiful
artwork. Yeah, Betsy Bowen, the artist, did a lovely job. She's an artist, not a bird illustrator. And so she brought a wonderful artistic sensibility to owls.
She surely did. And why did you choose to focus on owls?
Because that's what kind of a book she was. She was interested in drawing owls, and it's a subject I've done a lot of talking about because I live with my own personal licensed education owl, Archimedes, who was in your studio.
Yes, actually, he was. And it's wonderful, and you focus on the 12 owls that are found in Minnesota. I think almost all of them are found in Wisconsin as well.
Right. The two outliers for Minnesota are the burrowing owl and the barn owl. I think barn owls, probably we have some more records of them in Wisconsin than we do in Minnesota. But burrowing owls, they're a bird of the Great Plains and prairie dog towns, and their population is considered endangered in Minnesota, where they're only found in the far west. So those aren't found except accidentally in Wisconsin.
And I want to focus on a few, and all of our lines are already filled up here. But
everybody loves birds.
Oh, absolutely. Let's talk about the barred owl for a minute. I want to talk about a barred owl because Vivian posted a gorgeous picture of a baby barred owl on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show.
I can see it. It's wonderful.
Oh, man. It's a beautiful shot. And we actually have some audio of a barred owl. So let me see if we can, for our listeners here.
You can hear the spring peepers in the background, too.
Yeah, I can hear the spring peepers. And that barred owl song is very distinctive and one I think most people can recognize.
Right. When they start out, they follow that rhythm pattern, who cooks for you, who cooks for you all. I suspect that particular recording was made of a male because there's not much vibrato in the you all. There's more vibrato in the females.
Yeah. Well, I like your book because you bring your own experiences in. I think they're your experiences in each chapter.
Yeah, I wasn't. They didn't want it as a first-person book, but those are my experiences with owls.
Well, and you've had some wonderful experiences with owls.
Yeah, I've been a really lucky, lucky birder, and a lot of those experiences happened in Wisconsin as well as Minnesota. Though my very first experience with an owl was a snowy owl flew over my head and my husband's head in December 1975 when we were strolling down Lakeshore Drive in Chicago.
Oh, man. A snowy owl.
Just along the lakefront, and it flew right over our heads, no higher than a room with a low ceiling.
Oh.
And it met my eyes, and that was just so magical. That was the last lifer I got my first year of birding, and it was so thrilling.
Well, you know, you say that in your, I think it's in your introduction, that you, if you live in North America, you're likely within 10 miles of an owl's nest.
Yeah, probably even closer, but I wanted to be conservative in my guess.
So we're fortunate to have many owls.
Right. And when I lived in Madison, as a matter of fact, we were moving from Madison to Duluth in 1981 in the spring. And my picnic point list was at 199 species. Uh-huh. And I had never seen a screech owl there. And I never went there alone at night or anything, but I had been religious about checking out all the wood duck houses there. Every time I went by, I saw them all the time at the Arboretum, but I'd never seen one at Picnic Point. So my friend Frank Fries, actually, this was back in 1981, and he had a portable cassette player. So he took me out one night and played recordings of screech owls, and we got something like 18 in one.
Yeah.
I mean, they're
you write about that in your book.
Yeah, I mean, they're much more abundant than we realize. They're pretty secretive. Of course, screech owls are the worst named owl. They do not screech at all. They have a soft, gentle trill and a soft, gentle whinny. And if they get really angry, I live with Archimedes, and I know the one swear word that owls make, or screech owls make. He just goes, that's exactly it. At that volume, it's just this little quiet, and that's how he expresses displeasure. But when you think about it, if they're too noisy, they're going to get eaten by barred owls and great horned owls. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Actually, we have a song of a screech owl. Might as well, let's play that. It's the Eastern.
That's the whinny. And that's the trill and the whinny.
There we go. The Eastern Screech Owl. Pretty song, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It's very musical. I think that they were named by somebody who heard a begging young barred owl or great horned owl.
Oh.
And when they looked around, the only owl they saw was the screech owl. And so they thought it had been screeching, but they really don't screech.
Well, we have another picture from Gina on a Facebook page of an owl that soon gave birth to a couple of babies. She's wondering, do owls choose a nest to give birth and then relocate, or do they tend to maintain the same nest over time?
They tend to relocate, particularly the cavity nesting owls, because parasites can build up over time. And also, owls do not build their own nests. Great horned owls tend to appropriate an old, abandoned, red-tailed hawk nest. And so they'll switch around Though great horned owls will often reuse the same nest, but the little screech owls move around.
They move around. Terry in Hartford has a question for you. Terry, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm also just dropping my car off, so it's echoing. About 2 years ago, I was out tending to my little side garden, which is about a foot wide, and at the end of it, there was a little gray owl, a screech owl, and he was hiding behind some, I don't know, whatever I planted there. And I thought a cat had gotten to him. And my daughter, who is magnificent with animals, had the nerve to pick him up. And she drove him back to the Wisconsin Humane Society in Milwaukee, and they drove him back to Washington County because that's where he was from. So the owl got a nice ride. But he did make that swearing noise that you were talking about when you picked him up. And as they were leaving, we have a lot of those old soft maples on our block, and they get holes in them. Well, in one of the holes was, I think, the mother watching, but she was Rufus. He was gray, but she was red.
Right. Their feather colors are like our hair color, and you can have babies who have the other color between the Rufus and the gray.
Ah, there you go.
We do hear them occasionally. I lived in Slinger before I moved to Hartford, and we would hear the hookups for you owls. Those are the barred owls, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we would hear them. They'd start making a lot of noise right after Christmas because they're on the nest real early, right?
Well, barred owls aren't too early. Great horned owls are
they're
very
really
early. But the barred owls do start calling quite early.
Yeah, there was still snow on the ground and stuff. But anyway, I just wanted to share that stuff.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Terry. And Tom, you know, in Janesville has something about screech owls too, I think. Let's go there. Tom, hi.
Hi, how are you
hi,
doing
Tom.
This morning?
Good.
Well, great. I was a coon hunter for about 30 years, and up until the mid-90s, every night, wherever we went in southern Wisconsin here, we heard screech owls. But I haven't heard or seen a screech owl in Rock or Walworth County for maybe 15 years. And I've got a couple of screech owl boxes up, and I was wondering, is there something going on with the population of screech owls, and how can they maybe attract screech owls? Mm-hmm. I live in the country.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, they like areas with big shade trees. I think that great horned owls are probably increasing to some extent, and that may be a problem. Also, screech owls are, they nest in cavities, and those cavities can be appropriated by starlings and all kinds of
other birds.
Problems with cavity nesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of see to it that doesn't happen.
You try to do your best on that. But screech owls, numbers, probably?
I haven't looked at it specifically. I can look that up when I get home and post it on your Facebook page.
That would be wonderful. So hang in there, Tom. Check out our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show a little bit later on, and Laura will post that. Thank you for calling. Laura Erickson, our guest today. She is the author of many books, but her latest is 12 Owls, fascinating story about the 12 species of owls that reside in Minnesota and pretty much most of them Wisconsin as well. Larry Mueller here. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Big thank you, by the way, to all who contributed to the Wisconsin Public Radio drive. During our Half the Time pledge drive, we had nearly 9,500 listeners pledge, and we are very pleased to welcome over 2,600 new members. And you all donated over $1 million to fund Wisconsin Public Radio and the programs you depend on. I'm telling you, we can't thank you enough. It is such a great thrill for us to have the kind of support that you give us day in and day out here at Wisconsin Public Radio. So thank you very, very much. Laura Erickson, one of our gifts to you is Laura Erickson, by the way. Laura is writing for the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, among other things. She writes for Birdwatching Magazine. She's written a new book. It's called 12 Owls. Wonderful book. And so we're talking with her about owls, and we'll get into other birds as well. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Go to my Facebook page as well, at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post, we've got some wonderful photos posted already. So you can post a picture, but you can also ask a question on the Facebook page as well. And we have John in Amro up next. So let's go to John. Hi, John. Thank you for calling.
Hello. This show was just incredible timing. I was just driving out my driveway and noticed a dead owl at the end of my driveway, and went out and looked at it, and I was sitting back down and turned on the radio, and that's when, Larry, you were introducing the topic of the show. So it was incredible timing to find an owl right there. And I was—I think I got my question answered. It sounds like it was a screech owl because it was about 8 or 9 inches tall and kind of a reddy brownish color. Is that what that would be?
That's one possibility, but another, excuse me, is the saw-whet owl. They're migrating right now, and it could be one of those. They have a little bit rounder face, and they don't have feathers that stick up like ears on the top of their head.
Okay.
So that would be a possibility, too.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't notice any sticking up, but I had to get going to work, so I didn't take a good look, so I'll take a better look when I get back home.
Yeah, if it's still there.
Yeah, yeah.
You never know.
Right.
what happens. John, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Gene in Oshkosh, it's your turn. Hi, Gene.
Hi, Larry. I've got a question. I don't think I've seen owls in my whole long lifetime, but we were camping on the extreme southeast end of Yellowstone Lake, and we're out in the wilderness, and there was a small trail, and we were walking along the trail, and this is many, many years ago, and it's bothered me ever since then, and there were a pair of there was a pair of maybe 10, 12, 14 inches white with the round face, two owls sitting on a branch about 10 feet up. And there were four of us, and no matter how we put ourselves, we could not stop the owls from looking directly at ourselves, at us. And I've carried this with me for 45 years, and what kind of mobility does that head have in order to
be able to turn around like that?
That's right.
Yeah, now, well, some are better than others, aren't they, Laura? But they're all pretty good.
Well, they're all pretty good. Owls have 14 rather than 7 cervical vertebrae, and their necks are shockingly narrow.
Oh, really?
And they can sort of snake them around because they're much longer. When an owl's just sitting at rest, its ears or its neck is sort of shaped like a question mark underneath its feathers.
Okay.
And so they can turn it very, very smoothly. Their eyes are fixed in the socket. So in order to be following a moving object, they need to be able to move the entire face. They can't turn their eyes.
So what is it, a 360 or 180, or how many degrees can they rotate before have to come go back the other way?
I've never seen Archimedes, my screech owl, do more than a 180. He can just so instantly swivel it the other way if he wants to go beyond that. It's pretty well documented that most great horned owls, and probably other large ones, can go 270. But there are rehabbers and people who work with owls all the time. A couple of them insist that they've seen great horned owls do a 360.
Wow.
Well,
it was a wonderful experience for us, but it's bothered me all these many, many years how they did it. Thank you. That was a wonderful explanation.
Well, thanks. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling.
Gary in Boscobel. Well, let's turn to you now. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Larry. I'd like to relate a story to you and Laura about living with barred owls here in my yard out in the country for about 30 years now. And it's been a fascinating interaction with these birds. Mated pairs have come and gone. And when I first moved here in 1980, there was a pair that raised young ones across the road in an old soft maple tree, and it finally deteriorated. And they moved into a large hole in a cottonwood tree in front of my house. But unfortunately, the hole, the limb itself of the hole in it leaned out. So I learned that those young barred owls needed to get out on limbs and jump around and move around, strengthen their wings before they would leave the area. And there were no limbs there. So when they got big enough, they would push each other out of the hole, and they ended up on the ground with the coons. You get them every year. So I built a box and put it up, and they seemed to shy away from the box. And then after a year, I put a large perch on the front of the box, and they immediately moved in, and they became excellent neighbors. And oftentimes when I would be in the yard, I would talk to them, and they got to the point where they would basically just watch me in the yard, 30, 40 feet away. Became very trusting. And over the years, I had other experiences. I came home from a trip one time in the spring, and there was a young one that had come out of the box and was in the driveway, all wet and soggy in a rain, and certainly would have died of exposure before long. So I brought that bird in and dried it out and fed it and gave it nourishment for a couple of days, took it out and put it in a little apple tree next to edge of my yard. And before I got back to the house, those owls had watched me take that young owlet out there and put it in that tree, and they were there immediately. And I've watched the ups and downs of good parents that raise youngsters, and sometimes they're not so good, and the youngsters, the reproduction fails. I've had raccoons just terrorize the box many years and put electric fences around it. And it's a pleasure that once the youngsters fledge, you can hear them almost all summer long in the woods doing their begging call and squeaking, and you can really track the activities. And in turn, those adults just serenade all the time with their beautiful calls and their activities in the evening and at night. So they're probably the best neighbors anyone could ask for.
Oh, that's a great story, Gary. Comment, Laura?
Yeah, he talks about them nesting in a box. And Vivian's picture of the young barred owl, she also says on Facebook that they fledged from an owl box. You can get plans to build an owl box. The Minnesota DNR published a book, Woodworking for Wildlife, by Carol Henderson, that has plans for building it and also has a lot of suggestions for how to site the box to have your best luck. Because it's a wonderful experience, like Gary said.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, it's great. And and that's gone on for 30 years, he said. Different pairs. That's wonderful. Thanks, Gary. Thank you for sharing that with us. Doug in Oshkosh, it's your turn. Hi, Doug. Thank you for calling.
Another Oshkosh guy. Thank you for taking my call. A person named Gene just called from Oshkosh and said, they didn't see owls very often. Well, I can tell you a number of times across where I used to live on the American High, there were three tall pine trees. There were some great horns there for about 5 or 6 years. And in the last year they were there, they had three babies. I used to look out the window and just kind of glance over them. And then all of a sudden, about an hour later, still look at them. And they used to fly down to where it was an open water in the wintertime, early winter when they had their young, and would actually catch a duck and, bring it back, to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I always look for crows. When crows, a lot of crows are really going after, you can really hear them, and they're in a tree. And typically you will find an owl there then, because they really hate, the crows, apparently their young are ate by them.
Right.
The DNR, by the way, has a nest for great horns that you can build. And I built one that never was occupied. But anyway, I built one and put it up where they suggested and everything else. And then I have a very fascinating story. Some friends on 9th Street knew I kind of liked birds. And so I got this call one time from them. And they said, come on over, you got to see this owl. So for 3 days, that owl sat there. And I went over and looked at the owl. It sat on a little, the second floor of a little deck, you know, kind of thing. And it just sat there, sat there, sat there. And anyway, I looked down on the road where I was looking, and it never took its eyes off that as long as I was there. And anyway, there was its mate. It was hit by a car. It was flattened out. And then owl never left anyway. Kind of interesting.
What species?
I think it was a great horn. Uh-huh. And about two weeks ago, I was sitting on the porch, and there was a screech owl, you know, just looking at me, and I'm looking at him. So anyway, called the neighbors, and we all looked at it. But yeah, I love owls. Oh, they're fascinating.
Very, very, very cool story. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. That great horned owl nest, I haven't built one of those, but I the DNR has the plans for it, and really I think they've had some pretty good success with it.
Yeah, depending on what other structures are available for them to use. And once you start getting a bunch of baby owls who were raised in those platforms, the number of owls willing to use them will just rise dramatically.
Yeah. And I want to go back to the crows, because you have an interesting little piece in your book, 12 Owls, about that relationship between crows and owls, because crows, it has to do with crows' lack of mobility after dark.
Right. When I rehabbed, I had a crow that actually I was keeping as an education bird. And if I needed to trim his beak or trim his nails, or when I first got him and he needed dressings changed on his wing, I would always do them at nighttime. My husband would just hold a flashlight and I could pick him up, put him upside down, whatever I needed to do. And he was just utterly passive. Where in the daytime, he would have fought, you know, beak and nail.
And that means that in the night, when the owls are active,
the owls just come to a great horned owls can come to a crow roost, and it's really hard for them to tear apart the meat, but it's really easy for them to just lop off the head. And so they'll do that to half a dozen or more crows, and the poor crows, the survivors, are just sitting there rooted to their branch and silent. And so there's probably in some crow memories actual attacks by great horned owls. But they've shown in a lot of recent studies on crows that they learn from other crows in their group what particular individual animals or people represent a danger, and they will teach each other, you know, to avoid it or to squawk at it. And that expression, a murder of crows, had to have come about when somebody heard the crows attacking a great horned owl. It's called mobbing, and they have this blood-curdling quality when they get enough crows all mobbing an owl at once.
And they'll come from a long ways away.
Right. When one starts calling about it, its voice carries a certain radius, and as the crows within that radius hear it, they each respond as they're flying in, and so the radius just goes further and further out.
Janet in Madison, we are on to you now. Hi, Janet.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Laura. I'm enjoying the show a lot. Thanks for talking about the crows. I've actually had some great horns out my backyard, and you described it perfectly. One starts it, and they all come. My question is about one of the great horned youngsters that I was hearing every night, the screeching. In fact, I called him Screechy, and I look forward to hearing him every night. And probably about a month ago, I learned that I couldn't hear him anymore. He stopped, or he moved. And that's one question I have for you is, does he mature and stop screeching, and is that why I'm not hearing it? And then does he start hooting? Does he move, or does he stay around here? And then I had one other question I also have a screech owl, a real screech owl, in the area that I occasionally hear. And I'm wondering if you have any tips on the best way of actually trying to get to see him. I've never gotten to actually see him when I'm out walking at night.
Yeah, the easiest time to see screech owls is in the daytime if you know what cavities they roost in. But because they poke their head out a lot during the daytime, particularly while the sun is shining on the cavity, but they'll pull the head in the moment a chickadee notices them. Chickadees won't hurt them, but they'll say their own little chickadee swear words, which will alert. The meanest bird in the world, I think, if you're a screech owl, is an American robin. They will be just vicious in attacking them, but also blue jays and sometimes crows. But if they just pull their head in, then you're not going to see them. They are tricky to see at night. You need a good flashlight. And it's kind of rude to keep a flashlight on them for very long because their pupils, you know, contract, and then it's harder for them to notice a barred owl or a great horned owl that might be investigating what all's going on. But yeah, it's a matter of luck. I don't know of they tend to just sit very still while they're calling, and so they're hard to pick out. It's not like little saw-whet owls that start calling in April, and they call from the bare branches of an aspen tree usually. And while they're calling, their whole body moves forward with each little, they sound like a truck backing up, but with each of those beeps, their whole body moves forward like a little cuckoo clock. So once so all you have to do is, you know, you can often see them by moonlight, but if there's no moonlight and you use a flashlight, they're easy to pick out in the bare branches of an aspen. Screech owls are a lot trickier.
Yeah.
The screech owl usually call from its cavity or usually not?
They can do it either way. They, at least based on my observations of Archimedes and the few times when we lived in Madison that I went out looking for screech owls at nighttime, I've heard both.
Okay.
But you were talking about the great horned owl baby.
Mm-hmm.
They are, you know, entirely dependent upon their parents for food, and they're very regular in calling. It's like it's this constant reminder to their parents that everything they find, they have to feed to the babies instead of eating themselves. And that constant reminder just keeps parents searching. But around September, the families are starting to break up. The babies are becoming more independent because even while they're begging for food, they're starting to learn how to do their own hunting. And they move on to their own territories. By October, the families are pretty much entirely broken up, often not even very far into September.
Oh.
So,
well, that explains it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thanks, Janet.
Moved on. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Rod in Weyerhauser, we go to you now. Hi, Rod.
Hello. Yes, I tried to get a bunch in the short time. You know, I live in the northern part of the state, and all as long as I can remember, we always heard, you know, the hoot owl. That's all we ever called it. And I heard some people say, well, it's actually a barred owl, and then some people say great horn. So I guess, you know, it's no big deal, but what is, I'd like to know actually the true name, and also, I was wondering if the lady could try to imitate a screech owl. I won't laugh because I used to fish at night a lot, and even though, like now, I've been in the full moon, I was working out in the pasture out there, and I shut the fuck off, and I could hear that. And there was two of them because I could hear right here close. I don't know whether it was a screech owl or not, but they screech, you know, a couple times, and then off in the distance, you could hear the same thing, you know.
I actually have a screech owl. We played it a little earlier. You must have you probably tuned in a little late, Rod, but I'll play it again. I'll play it again, so stay listening.
Okay. And I was going to just a short story. My dad used to fish a lot, you know, at night.
Yeah.
A little lake up here, and we knew it's like the back of our hand, you know. So, I mean, you'd out there in the dark, and, you know, no moonlight, and you could cast, and no buck distance for sure. Once in a while, you'd hit the pads or some, your brush. But anyhow, he casted this up. He used to use the old bass serenals or jitterbug, you know.
Yep.
And he cast it. I wanted to say hoot owl, but the last time he told this story, he's 89, so he might be getting forgetful. He said it was a screech owl. And he said that sucker grabbed it, and he said, do you have a picnic? He brought it into the boat, and what a tangled-up mess, you know. Got him finally untangled, and he put him on the front seat of his old wooden boat. The guy rented these old wooden boats. A couple bucks. And he said that thing was sitting there for darn near an hour shaking, you know, shaking once in a while to get the water ice pulls off. And finally he took off, you know.
Yep.
Well, I was musky fishing, too. I got to remember, I threw a musky plug, and there was a flock of ducks. And I had another guy with me, and he was laughing his butt off. Because he says, who needs to go shot with a shotgun? I cut the darn duck to his boat. And the same thing, I had a mess, you know, and untangled. And
but a real mess. Well, hoot owls. Laura, what's a hoot owl?
Well, we have two species of hoot owls that are the common ones in Wisconsin. The great horned owl has a soft, mellow hoot. And the barred owl, it's more strident in quality, and it follows the rhythm. Who cooks for you? Who cooks for you all? So it depends on the tone, the quality of the hoot, and the rhythm. Once in a while, we've had records of great gray owls nesting in northernmost Wisconsin. They have a deep, resonant, and steady drumbeat hoot. So the hoot owl can refer to any of those three, usually to the great horned or the barred. Sometimes people hear a mourning dove and think that's an owl because they say hoo-hoo too, but that's daytime
different.
And it's totally different, yeah.
Here's the great horned. Definitely a great horned owl.
Yeah, soft and mellow. And
yeah, very nice. And Rod, thank you again for calling. We'll turn to John in Appleton next. John, hi to you.
Doing well. How about yourself?
Great.
Good. Say, I was wondering, I want to ask your guest if she's ever heard anything about the legends from the Latinos about owls being shapeshifters, especially the great horned owl. My wife is from Nicaragua, and I've been involved with the Latin culture for many years, and I've heard people from Mexico all the way down to South America can't stand owls. They don't even want to look at the image of them. They're just basically terrified of them, and I was wondering if your guest has ever heard that legend,
okay,
where that came about, and if there's also other native peoples that hold the same view.
All right, Laura?
Every culture on the planet has folklore and mythology about owls. A lot of them, especially the large owls, in many cultures are symbols of death or eerie, weird phenomena like shape-shifting. Partly it's because these birds are very cryptically colored and can be difficult to see in the daytime, and their silent flight, they might just suddenly appear and you don't know how they got there and things like that, you know, especially in cultures pre-optics, you know, and pre-flashlight. But interestingly, some native cultures in America who see large owls carrying the spirits of the dead to the afterworld have a benevolent sense of them but connect them with death. But that's the larger owls. Some of them look at the smaller species, the burrowing owls in the Great Plains or the pygmy owl or the saw-whet or the screech owls, as being much more just kind of endearing. And there's even some records of native people keeping small owls as pets.
There we go. Thank you, John, again, for calling. I appreciate your call. Laura Erickson, our guest today. ornithologist and author of 12 Owls, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking birds today with Laura Erickson, author of her most recent book, 12 Owls. And so we've been talking about owls. We can talk about other birds as well. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to see some more photos of owls or other birds. And you can also post questions there as well. And John in Appleton's been waiting here a while. So let's go to John. Hi, John. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering if Laura could shed some light on a bizarre behavior I witnessed at the Appleton golf course last week. Standing on the number two tee and about 30 meters in front of me was a big red-tailed hawk with a stick about 2 feet long in its talons, and it would jump in the air and twist and rotate maybe 180 degrees and do that repeatedly. And so I cautiously walked up a little slowly, and the bird took off and flew away and landed and started doing it again. Never anything like that.
So it took off with the stick?
Yeah, carrying the stick.
Well, what do you think, Laura?
That's intriguing. It could either have somehow gotten the stick stuck on one toe, might have been like snagged in it, or it might just be doing a little home repair. Sometimes eagles and red tails have sort of a hormonal surge at the end of their breeding season, where they're kind of getting into fix-it-up mode, because eagles always reuse the same nest, and red tails often do. And they might be doing, it might have been doing a little goofing around with the stick. But that kind of display in full view of people is pretty odd for a red tail.
That sounds like a good idea to have it be stuck, like it was trying to get rid of it.
Yeah.
It could have had some monofilament stuck on it, or it could have just somehow gotten a toe tangled in something.
Yeah.
Well, thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks, John. And Bob in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Hi.
Laura, this is Bob Schwaderer, Schwampy.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm living in Eau Claire now, and when I was at Long Lake Conservation Center, which was about 50 miles south of where you live, we used to call in barred owls in particular for our school groups, and we got pretty good at mimicking their call, and there were many times when I would have three or four of them in kind of an arc around us that I would get them pretty well inflamed, where they were doing their hoo 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 ah ah portion of their call, and we've had some very exciting conversations with them over the years, hundreds and thousands of kids were thrilled to hear that. And I had staff members who also got very good at doing that. And I'm going to give you a non-owl observation. We still have got bluebirds in our yard at our feeder, and I've been giving them freeze-dried mealworms, and just a couple of days ago, we had six bluebirds in the feeder at one time, and it was just a magnificent sight to see, and they have to be young northern birds that are migrating through, and they're just bulking up, so I'm assuming that it's okay to keep giving them food as long as they stick around and eat it, that they'll figure out it's time to get out of here when the weather starts to change on them.
Yeah.
Right. Bluebirds have a pretty strong migratory urge, but October is their sort of peak month for migration through Minnesota and Wisconsin. So it doesn't surprise me that there's some, you know, the ones who notice a feeder during migration tend to be ones who have feeders where they're nesting further north, too. So they have a search pattern that includes a feeder. A lot of bluebirds have never seen a feeder and only discover one if they notice other bluebirds or just happen to be right near it.
So somebody put the word out and brought in a bunch of their pals.
Yeah.
Apparently.
That's great.
Yeah, thanks, Bob.
Well, yeah, you bet. It's great to hear you.
Thank you very much. Diane in Boston, it is your turn. Hi, Diane.
Well, hello there. I was just wondering, I was driving at night in the hills of Elroy, and I was lucky enough to see something skittering across the road, so thank heavens I slowed down. And out of nowhere came an owl, and he swooped down to get whatever it was on the road, but he ended up, like, right in my headlights. And he turned and he looked at me, and his wingspan was, he'd have put out the car if I would have hit him. And he just looked at me, swooped it up, and left. And to me, it was absolutely magical. And I wonder how lucky was that, really? How often did someone get to see something like that?
Hmm.
That's exceptional because in most cases, when an owl flies through somebody's headlight beams, it ends up getting hit by the car. And a lot of times people don't know what it was they hit. So you were pretty darn lucky.
Yeah.
That and the owl was, too. And it all came because you were an observant driver who slowed down when you saw the other animal skittering across the road.
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Diane.
It was magical. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Somebody is wondering why, Laura, you named your owl Archimedes.
Well, I didn't name him that. My teenage son, he was a teenager at the time I got him, named him for the character Archimedes, that is an owl that hangs out with Merlin, the character in the book, The Once and Future King, and the Disney movie, The Sword and the Stone.
There you go. Karen in Milwaukee, we turn to you now. Hi, Karen.
Good morning. Question for you. I actually live about 10 minutes. I live in Dodge County, so Neosho. And we have both screech and barred owls in our 8-acre woods. And I echo Bob's experience in that. I feel like I can talk to them, which mm-hmm. seems crazy. But they will do a call and response, essentially. My question, though, is the screech owl seem to be around more in the spring, and I missed part of the conversation this morning. Is that typical? I haven't heard the screech owl since, or is it that the barred owls kind of move in and the screech owls move out?
Well, when the barred owls move in, or when the screech owls are aware that there's a barred owl near, they tend to shut up because they don't want to be eaten by a barred owl. Archimedes goes through a resurgence of singing. Usually when he's finished molting in September, he'll start calling now and again at nighttime. And if I call back to him, we can go for 45 minutes or an hour if I'm working at my computer and he wants to call.
My family laughs at me. They think it's hilarious. My kids just, you know, Mom, you're talking to the owls again. But it's entertainment. Okay, so the screech owls are still around, they're just quieter.
Right. Screech owls and barred owls are pretty much non-migratory. And screech owls are kind of interesting. They mate for life, and their species has what they call assortative mating, where they're going across a particular ladder. And in the case of screech owls, their mates, a pair of them, are virtually always the same age. And it's kind of a mystery how they know what age the other bird is. But based on banding studies, where they can look at birds in the hand, they may actually be looking at feather wear in potential mates the way banders do to gauge which feathers are new and how old that makes the bird.
Amazing.
Earlier, but do both the barred and the screech owls have their children stick around, or do they leave?
The baby screech owls tend to stay with their families for quite a while, into the fall sometimes.
Okay, yeah, they're sticking around then. All right, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Victoria in Westfield, your turn. Hi, Vic.
Hi, good morning. Afternoon, sorry. I've got two questions about owls. I live in an oak woods in the middle of Wisconsin, and I hear a lot of different owl calls, and I've seen a lot of owls. I can identify them when I see them by looking in my bird book. I can't identify their calls, and you've been very helpful with that today with the recording. I have an owl that I have been calling for years, the petulant owl, because of its call, and I'll do my best to imitate it. And it's like this, hoo, hoo, as though it's a petulant child. And then my other owl question, and I will hang up before you answer, is that I have, like a lot of people do these days, I have a small flock of chickens, and they wander loose in the yard and in the woods. And because of that, I wonder, first of all, I've lost a few for unknown reasons. Could that be owls, although they are in their coop locked up at night? And is it a good idea to encourage owls by putting up, say, an owl box because I have the chickens?
Good questions, and we'll get to those questions after we take a quick look at the news here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us. Few things convey a sense of place, of time, of day, and of season more than the comings and goings and calls of birds. And this time of year, the activity level reaches a kind of a fevered pitch, don't you think? How closely do you watch the birds around you? Do you know where to look to see flocks preparing to migrate? And maybe you want to know how to feed those as they come through. Our guest today, Laura Erickson of the Cornell Lab of Ornithology and the podcast For the Birds with us. She's an experienced and passionate birder with us until 12:30 today. Do you have a birding question? Laura's happy to help. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Check our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show there. Like it while you're there, and we'll get regular updates on upcoming show topics right to you. And you can email us as well at talk@wpr.org. We'll be back with Laura right after this look at the news. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking today with Laura Erickson, ornithologist, writes for the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, among other things. She has done some wonderful writing. She also has produced a radio spot called For the Birds for 25 years. You had a lot of fun with that, haven't you, Laura?
Yeah, I really have. That's why I've done it for a quarter of a century as a volunteer.
Well, yeah, it's you're not making your first $1 million on it.
Nope.
You just do it for fun.
Yep.
Oh boy. Well, I tell you what, we had a caller who wondered about owls. Well, owls eat chickens. And I think owls would eat chickens if they could get their hands on them. Or their...
Well, they would, but they, in the daytime, because she said they were penned at nighttime,
yeah.
I suspect that she's got more problems with maybe a goshawk or a red-tailed hawk or a fox. Foxes I've seen hunting in my neighborhood sometimes in daytime. Those are, and even a feral cat would be a possibility.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different things that put those poor chickens at risk before we do. She was also asking about the petulant owl that she hears just a single note, a descending note. And I'm wondering, sometimes barred owls just make that final hoo-ah. And I think that is a possibility. One of the there's a fabulous CD put out by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology that it has all the owl calls of all the owls of North America that is available on their website. It may even be like on Amazon or something like that. That is just owl calls. And there's also all the owls that you would hear in Minnesota. Their basic, most commonly heard calls are available on a CD that Lang Elliott did the recordings for. It's the Stokes Field Guide to Bird Sounds. I think that might be the one you're using. using.
Yeah, that's not the one we're using, but I know Lang's work. Lang did a really nice job on that.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Very good. Yeah, very good. He's, you know, Shelby emailed you and just loves your hearing you talk, and she's read your many books. She'd like to share the fact that here in the little town of Boulder Junction in northeast Wisconsin, blessed to have a very talented artist, and you may or may not know, Wiley Miller, who spent many hours studying and carefully sculpting in wood all of the owls native to Wisconsin in life size. An amazing collection to visit in his home showroom on the edge of town, and that is in Boulder Junction.
Yeah, it would be really nice for me to check that out. Every year I teach an elder hostel up at Trees for Tomorrow in Eagle River, so it's not that far away.
Not that far away. I would like to see that as well. It sounds great.
Yeah. Betsy Bowen, the artwork in our book, she did each of those owls life size. So the littler owls, you see their whole body, but as they get bigger, you see less and less of the owl.
But the head, for example, is the size of the head of the great horn, for example.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. There. And the artwork in there is you know really 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 nice. I can't wait. I've read the book, but I want to sit down with my 8-year-old with Emily and just do a chapter at a time.
You know. Well, a couple of them are pretty sad. I wasn't thinking about that when I wrote it, about how many children would be drawn to Betsy's artwork in particular. The short-eared owl one, I think, is sad. That's pretty sad.
That's kind of a sad one. But we have Peter, actually, on our Facebook page, who says he's already sent the 12 Owls book to the 6-year-old granddaughter who lives in Indianapolis. She loves owls and birds. I gave her my Sibley Guide to Birds last Thanksgiving, and she was using it more than I was.
Yeah, getting a field guide and binoculars for children, and surprisingly, it makes a pretty good engagement gift to give someone field guide and binoculars, even if they didn't know they were interested in birds. I did that for my niece, who's an actress from Chicago, and she's very urban, and her husband grew up in Oklahoma, and his mother gave them a bird feeder, so they used the binoculars to look at birds. And also, you know, you can say it's partly for looking at sports, too, which is one of the uses for them. But then they got intrigued with the field guide when they started seeing cool birds at their feeder, and it's the gift that keeps on giving.
Absolutely. That's a wonderful story. Jan in Chippewa Falls has a comment or question. Jan, hi.
Hi, Larry and Laura. I wanted to know, I live on the Chippewa River, and often I will call to owls, and I started wondering, is that confusing to them?
Well, if you do a good job of calling, you sound like another owl on their territory. When you call them in the wintertime, they usually respond pretty quickly. They're hearing you say, I'm on my property, and they're saying, I'm on my property. And if they're loud, that means that their property is awfully close to yours and they may want you to leave. They work out their territorial disputes through the wintertime. And when they start breeding, they get much slower about responding to calls. They know that other owls are supposed to be on their territory. They don't recognize your voice as their established neighbors. And they start, they'll very often wait. When I teach my elder hostel in June, that's the one time of year that I call an owl in at nighttime. And we can get a very long wait to hear an owl respond in May or June. When they do respond, they tend to have flown in and are checking us out before we ever even know they're there.
Oh, okay. All right. And also, I want to thank you. This spring, I heard the crows in our neighborhood go crazy, and it was kind of scary. you know, I just did not know. I mean, it sounded like dozens of them screaming. And now I know that most likely an owl was nearby.
Yep.
Right. That's but, the one thing. Well, once in a while, if a baby croak falls out of the nest, even a nearby dog will elicit a lot of that. But the main thing would be a great horned owl.
Yes, I had never heard anything like that. And I feed the crows. I feed them out on our road and just throw out dog food or cat food or breadcrumbs. And that just, I didn't know what was going on. So thanks for telling me.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Jen. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Appreciate your call. Carol in Madison, hello to you.
Hello. I was calling because I was told by a client of mine that years ago there was a ranger in Minnesota. This is at least 20 years ago, and he always wore his favorite animal hat that had a tail, and I believe it may have had a head as well. And sadly, he died because a great horned owl came down and grabbed his head, and the talons crushed through his temples, and he died from the owl. Yeah.
Well,
I've heard a lot of stories of owls carrying off people's fur caps, but I've not heard this story. It would be, I'm kind of surprised I haven't heard it, but it's theoretically possible.
Yeah.
They don't weigh that much, but and when they grab things, they don't collide with them because that would be dangerous for them. They're mainly, and usually they land on something. I mean, they'll pull off a hat, but yeah, that's an interesting story.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Okay, thanks.
Thanks, yeah, thanks, Carol. An email from Sue in Madison. Isn't it about time for the Woodland Dunes Nature Center in Two Rivers to be tagging saw-wet owls? That's a great place to see those secretive owls.
Yeah, I'll bet they're doing it every night.
I would.
They probably started back in late September.
Yeah, I would think so. Alice in Milwaukee says, my cousin and her husband recently moved from Indiana to Florida. At the end of an evening bike ride, they saw an owl who eventually flew to and perched atop a palm tree. Although they live quite near a bird sanctuary, river and pond of a golf course, I was surprised to hear that an owl would perch atop a palm tree. Is that a circumstance unusual?
Not particularly. In Florida, I'm not sure what species, but great horns will do that. Barn owls, there are some down there. And, they would perch in them. As a matter of fact, barn owls will even roost in a palm tree all day long. They're pretty sheltered from, being noticed in those.
In those circumstances. We had, our regional manager in Superior, John Munson, shared a photo on Facebook. I don't know if you're at your computer anymore, Laura, or not, but there's a photo that says back in the winter of 2004-05, there was an influx of owls to the Twin Ports. I took some pictures of one on a wintry, snowy morning. Any idea what that owl is?
It's a great gray owl, and I can tell it, even though you can't see its face, and its face is turned to the side, and so you don't have a real good sense. But the one thing you really see on this bird, even though it's like snowy and hazy, you see the white bow tie.
Yeah.
That's a really good field mark. There's a movie that just started this past weekend, The Big Year.
Yeah.
That has Owen Wilson and Steve Martin and Jack Black as these three high-powered birders, each trying to see the most birds in North America. And there's an incredibly moving scene with Jack Black and Brian Dennehy and a great gray owl. But tragically, they didn't come up here to get their film footage. They used an animatronic great gray owl. But you can see that white bow tie, even though it's animatronic.
You know, that the book, which it, I guess is so, is the book. I read the book and had the author on the show, and I loved the book. But apparently the movie is not anything at all like the book, but might be fun anyway.
Oh, I loved it. Birders filled the theater on Friday night when it opened in Duluth. They make specific mention of both Duluth and the Sac-Zim Bog. So it was obviously a movie we were all going to love. But they did take some... right at the beginning, this says this movie is based on a true story. Only the facts have been changed. and it's a really sweet-spirited movie about bird watching. So we'll take what we can get.
I'm definitely going to see it. And I did love the book. I don't know if you read the book or not, but it was great fun. And the author was a
liberties.
Lot of fun.
Yeah, they took liberties with the characters, but I think they sort of captured the essence of the three men, one being just extremely focused and high-powered, one reaching a point where this was like his last shot at it, but he was mellowing out in a lot of ways, and then one who was working on a shoestring. He didn't have the money to be doing this, but he...
Doing it anyway.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Martin in Potosi, your turn now. Hi, Martin.
Hello there. We had a pair of Labradors, and they forced us to go walking all times of year. We were out walking in February through a small trees area, and they were poking their nose around at the base of a tree and looking at the owl pellets in the bottom. I go, oh, there's owl pellets. I looked up. Eye level with me was a very small owl, about 8 inches tall. I don't know what kind. But my question is, are they as sensitive to energy in, energy out as fish are in the wintertime? I'm a big fish person.
Yeah. What do you think, Laura?
Fish are cold-blooded, owls are warm-blooded, and they really need a lot of food to sustain their metabolism. So the tinier owls are the ones that are most vulnerable. When they're sitting on a branch, and they're a little teeny owl, they're most likely passing through, haven't found a good cavity, because the cavities really help them both to be protected against crows and things that would attack little owls, but also keep them warmer.
This owl never moved.
Even if their eyes appear closed, they are open a slit and watching your every move. But they don't want to open their eyes all the way if they can avoid it in the daytime, because they don't want chickadees to see their big yellow eyes and start alerting everybody else.
We were within 3 feet of it, so I grabbed the dogs and we beat feet out of there so we wouldn't disturb it. But
very cool.
The question is, what kind of owl would that be? And you already answered the question about if you disturb it, you could harm it. But
now, where exactly were you?
Well, this was actually in Michigan, but we're living in Potosi now.
But was it in the Upper Peninsula or the lower?
No, extreme lower part of the state.
Okay, so it was most likely a saw-whet owl. Usually screech owls by wintertime have a pretty definite cavity. Did it have little feathers sticking up like cat ears?
I don't
have
remember.
A little round head? I suspect it was a saw-whet owl. And it, they have to be kind of on the move in the winter. It's really hard to come to a new area and find an unoccupied cavity because flying squirrels, even mice, use them. And, they want to find an unoccupied one. And when they run out of food or just are having trouble finding food, they'll move to another spot.
Yeah. There we go. Thanks a lot, Martin. Appreciate your call. And Don in Warren, Illinois, it's your turn. Hi, Don.
Hi. A couple of owl stories. A few years ago, late in the spring, the snow was all gone. We were east of Galena a few miles and within sight of the Wisconsin border, but there was a snowy owl sitting on the fence, very close, very obvious, first one I've ever seen. Second story, in 1955, we moved into... custodian of the scout camp here in Joe Davis County. And we had to cross a creek, ford a creek,
to get to the house, which turned into a problem. But at any rate, there was a barn owl that would sit on a snag by the river, and you'd go by at night, and the road was quite level. And when you got to the water where you had to cross, of course, it was very shallow, when the headlights of the car would strike the water, it would blind the fish. And the chubs and the shiners were up there feeding. And that owl would look at you, then look at the water, and they would be, the second they were blinded, he'd grab one. And I don't care how many times you came by there, he would do exactly the same thing. And I thought, what an opportunist. You know, whatever opportunity arises, I'm going to take advantage of it.
Yeah. Great story, isn't it, Laura?
Yeah, and in winter, many owls cache their food when they have a really good opportunity to get more than they need. They'll actually, you know, store it away to eat when they're not having such an easy time of it.
Yeah, it's a great story. Thanks, Don. Susan in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Susan.
Hello. Well, I have a fresh owl story from morel picking time this spring. I don't know, is that late May, early June?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had two barred owl fledglings that I spied stretching their wings. They must have just left the nest. And the parents were in a big old cotton tree, too. They were all in a cotton tree, and they'd walk like a tightrope up and down those limbs, and it was really neat seeing them. Well, then at night, I came out there, and I saw one of the parents actually fly up and give one a snake. Okay, so the next morning I went out, and one was still flapping its wings, you know, exercising, but I didn't see the other one. And then I looked, and it was on the ground. And it was perfectly fine, but it was on the ground. And my theory was that it was probably flapping its wings and caught one on a branch and wasn't able to fly yet and fell, so it could only walk. The mother was in a willow tree. This is on a creek, too. And she was watching, not me, but, you know, you could tell, watching her family. And I was really worried, you know. And I went back in the house. My house is a ways away from this. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to bug them, but I just... So then I went out later in the afternoon, and that other one was still on the branch, and the other baby was nowhere around. I didn't see any pile of feathers, like a predator had gotten it. And I'm just going to ask you, do you think that it could... like have just kind of hip-hopped higher and higher into bushes?
That's
could it
exactly
ever have gotten
what they do.
Into a tall branch again, or
that's
are they,
what they
really
do.
Vulnerable?
Yeah, at that stage, the babies are actually called branchers. And they do sometimes fall to the ground. If they don't get injured in the actual impact, then they just crawl into a shrub and work their way higher up.
Can the parents defend them at all, or would they?
The parents are reluctant to come down because they can't, like, carry the baby off or anything, and they're just kind of hoping that potential predators will leave.
And they might feed it there.
Oh, they'll continue to feed it. Mm-hmm. The babies make their begging calls wherever they happen to be, and the parents can find them really easily.
Well, it was interesting, but, you know, it was sad, too, to see that. But
yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
That's life, I guess.
Yep, that's life.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. You want to say a word or two about your podcast for the birds, Laura?
Oh, well, it's on iTunes and it's free, and I talk about birds. Usually there'll be like 3 or 4 new ones a week. Sometimes just one or two, Lang Elliott gives me permission to use his bird calls for free because I do it as a volunteer. And I just try to talk about our common birds that, you know, we're likely to see in Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Well, that sounds wonderful. So for the birds, and people can get, it's through iTunes, right?
Right.
There. And your book, I love reading your book, and I'm going to have another enjoyable time reading it again with my 8-year-old daughter. And all right, I'll check out the couple of sad stories. I guess I can maybe, I'll read them. She'll have a tear, but you know, it's life too, isn't it?
Yeah, and it'll make her aware that we should never mow in June or early July, unless we really need the high protein hay.
Yeah, absolutely. Laura, thank you so much. I very much appreciate you being with us, and I loved your book. Hope we have a chance to talk soon.
Me too. This was fun.
Laura Erickson, her book is 12 Owls. Title is 12 Owls. It's a it's a wonderful book with some great, great artwork, and I know you're going to enjoy looking at it. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.